This is from the March 3rd, 2019 service at Plymouth Presbyterian Church in St. Helens, Oregon.
The first scripture lesson for today is from the book of Exodus, chapter 34, verses 29 through 32. You may follow along in the Pew Bible, page 81. This is when Moses is coming down from Mount Sinai for the second time with the Ten Commandments on the tablets. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called out to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterwards, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
The scripture readings this morning from the New Testament are in the second book of Corinthians and in Luke's gospel. I'm going to read the gospel according to Luke. I'm going to do the gospel reading first because chronologically it's significant. Luke comes before Paul. And in this case, Paul is talking about the events of both the Exodus reading that Linda read a moment ago and what happens in Luke chapter 9, known as the Transfiguration, which is as Jesus is just beginning the ministry and calling disciples, he takes this time out on a mountain. And on the mountaintop, this experience. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now, Peter and his companions were weighed down heavily with sleep. But just as they were awakening, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Luke writes this about these events. Pardon me, Paul writes this about these events in Luke. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Now, the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And all of us, with unveiled faces, not veiled like after Moses on the mountain, but with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, the Spirit. This is the word of the Lord. So what would it mean for us to be truly at home? You and I. For me, the question's about a lot more than a house, of course. It's about how you feel. How you think. Well, what does it mean to be at home? Feeling free, I think, is part of it. I think there's a connection between a feeling of freedom and being at home. At least that's the case I'm going to try to make today. And I think that there are evidence of it in the scripture readings. So, freedom. We'll start there, right? A person, how do you find freedom and what's that about? Well, so a lot of times people wander around for a while in their life, usually early on, younger, before settling into one place and calling it home, right? Now, that wandering is different from what I mean by freedom. That's wandering. Because some people find their home by staying at home and staying rooted in one place, the place they were born, and they don't do much wandering, and they live in the very town they were born in. And that rootedness in no way negates freedom, or their freedom to be there, and their sense of being at home. Other people can't possibly imagine what it would like to feel at home in the place they were born, because they don't. And so they find their home somewhere else. Either way, it's difficult, I think, to really feel at home if you feel afraid or confined. And I do think wandering can help you find your home. But freedom is how you feel when truly you are at home, however you find it. Does that make any sense? Okay. Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, what I just read, he wrote about freedom. And he was describing Moses and the people of Israel who wandered in the wilderness when he did it. And he described them wandering in the wilderness and the veil, and he kind of reinterprets the veil, but he says with unveiled face, something is different now. He said that things are different after Jesus than they were in the time of Moses. Specifically, as Paul describes it for him, the Spirit of God is free in a different and new kind of way. Whatever that means. And that's the question. What does that mean for you and for me, right? To have the Spirit more alive and free in our lives. And as I think about people wandering in the wilderness, searching for a home, which is what they did in the Old Testament, I wonder what they would have thought if they could have read those words from Paul hundreds of years later. Paul said, where the Spirit of God is, there is freedom. Is there anything about the Ten Commandments that sets you free? Don't usually think of it that way, but sometimes if you really think about it, living in community in a way that brings justice and integrity is a certain kind of freedom. I was thinking about all that and Paul's words about freedom and what freedom really is, and the connection between freedom and really feeling at home and safe and secure. And I came across a series of paintings called The Four Freedoms. Four Freedoms is a series of oil paintings. They're on the front cover of your bulletin. They're by the American artist Norman Rockwell. Four Freedoms refer to President Franklin D. Roosevelt's State of the Union Address, January 1941, in which he identified four essential human rights that should universally be protected: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And the paintings are now in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, in a museum, and the theme is the basis for the Atlantic Charter at the end of World War II and the Charter of the United Nations, these freedoms. These paintings were completed in 1943. They were in the Saturday Evening Post over 4 weeks, along with essays written by famous people at the time about what it really meant to be free. Imagine. And so during the weeks of Lent now, in March, these paintings will be the launching pads, one at a time, for sermons and worship. The Lent worship theme this year is wandering and coming home. That's a very Lenten thing. We do it every year, but this year maybe we'll think about it in a new way. The scripture texts and the lectionary are threaded together with this theme of wandering and coming home and freedom. Both Jesus and Israel wander in the wilderness at the beginning of their story. Jesus wanders in the wilderness before his ministry. The people of Israel find the Ten Commandments before they go to the Promised Land. And the people of Israel eventually return home after the exile, hundreds and hundreds of years later, it says in Psalm 126, like a people in a dream. Imagine having been forcibly removed from your home by an army in exile, living there for generations, and coming back to Zion, Jerusalem, your home, coming home again, like a people in a dream, it says. Paul says, our true home is in heaven. So maybe feeling a little more at home spiritually will help us discover a new sense of freedom in our lives. That's my hope, and living more fully and freely in our faith life. These four paintings not only deal with the topic of freedom, they are a kind of dream for life together. Now, I know that not everybody shared FDR's dream for America after World War II. And I know that even today, there are people with questions about the specifics of that. I don't want to go into that. I prefer not to dwell on that here. That's not my purpose or the point of this. Instead, what I'd like to do is think about our dreams for the world around us, for our own lives, for this church, for our nation, and about what that means about living with the Spirit of God in us and in faith, and about how dreams can both set us free and help us feel at home, more at home, find a home. The incident Paul wrote about in the text from Exodus for today, the Old Testament reading, Moses had come down a mountain after being with God, getting the Ten Commandments. Do you ever think of the Ten Commandments as a dream for life? God's dream for us to live that way because it's respectful and right and good. According to the book of Exodus, Moses' face was shining after this time on the mountain. The people wondered what that meant, and people have wondered for centuries exactly what the deal with Moses' face shining is, and there's a lot of explanations. It's been said that it was a way of saying God's spirit was kind of infused into Moses in that experience. Maybe, but I wonder if maybe it was like Moses had just woken from a dream or had received a dream from God about how the world could be in covenant. Right? Centuries later, when Peter is on the mountaintop with Jesus, he has a vision of Moses. And Luke says, it was like the disciples woke from a dream. Listen to how Luke describes it. Again, Moses appeared to Peter in glory. Peter and those who were with him were heavy with sleep. And when they woke up, they saw his glory. So I think that this is a description of a dream for the future of the world given to Moses, given to the disciples by God. God's dream for us all, made whole, made free, made at home, to be at home in God, with God, our true home. And I think about that and ask you to consider some words from a poem. It's kind of a long poem. It's called Dream Bearers, but I think it helps us think this through and see it more fully. So it's a lens to hear the texts through today. In all the prophecies, the destruction of the world is written. All the prophecies foretell humanity creating its own destruction. But time and life, endlessly renewed, also engendered a generation of lovers and dreamers. Dreamers were men and women who dreamt not of the world's destruction, but of building a world of butterflies and nightingales. The dream bearers multiplied in the world. They were fiercely attacked by those who bore catastrophic prophecies. They were called deluded romantics, inventors of utopian homes. They were told that their words were old, which is true, since paradise is an ancient memory in the heart of humanity. And those who accumulated riches feared them. They hurled their armies at them. But every night at home, the dream bearers made love, and the seed continued to grow in the wombs of women. They not only bore dreams, they multiplied them. They made their dreams run and speak. This is how the world created life again, just as it had created those who invented a way to extinguish the sun. Like hardworking little ants, they never stopped dreaming and building their beautiful worlds. Worlds of brothers and sisters who consoled each other, who healed and cared for each other. They were happy. But they are dangerous, was the message. They must be destroyed, it was murmured. The dream bearers knew their power, and they knew life had created them to protect itself from death. The prophets of darkness spent nights watching the secret routes, but the dream traffic had been unleashed, and it could not be stopped. It is said that the earth, after giving birth to them, unchained a rainbow in the sky. All we know is that we have seen them. We know that life created them as a protection against the prophecies of death. Wow. Well, in the next few weeks, the sermons in Lent will go one dream at a time, one painting at a time, one scripture reading at a time. And my hope is that they will somehow be about how we make at least some of our own dreams into reality, and that we will find ways to do that faithfully in the world around us and in our own lives.